So today I'm going to be presenting some research that we have done on a new candidate gene for berry color that we've discovered in muscadine grapes. And the lead author on this is my postdoc, Aruna Varanasi, who has left our program now, but she's done a lot of really fascinating, great work, so I want to give her credit. So for those of you who are not fortunate enough to be familiar with muscadine grapes, they're the first cultivated grape in North America, and they're native to the southeastern U.S., so they're not very cold hardy. But they are very disease resistant, and they're well adapted to the hot, humid, rainy climate that we have in the southeast. So they have been used as a source of disease resistance genes, things like Run 1, a powdery mildew resistance gene that's widely deployed in wine grape breeding. They are very aromatic and delicious, although John Priest earlier today said he doesn't like them. Not everyone has a sophisticated enough palate. some people, I think more people, are thrown off by the thick, leathery slip skins and the soft flesh that people have told me is like oyster or snot before or an eyeball. I've gotten all these things. So we do a lot of work on improving the texture particularly, because I do think that highly flavored grapes are very popular and there's a market for that. So I think that the flavor can be a benefit to us. Muscadines belong to a different subgenus than the Uvitis bunch grapes like Vitis vinifera and Vitis labrusca that most of us are more familiar with. And they actually have a different chromosome number. So they've got a base chromosome number of 20 instead of 19. And that complicates some of these breeding efforts to try and combine the consumer quality traits from vinifera with the disease resistance and adaptation that we want from muscadinia. So today I'm particularly focused on color and anthocyanins. So muscadine fruit is generally characterized as black or bronze. You've got a picture of the black up here. It's kind of a dark purple. And then the bronze is this kind of dirty yellow-green color. And the bronze-fruited muscadines can occur in the wild, but the vast majority of wild muscadines are black. Scuppernong, which if you go to a farmer's market in the southeast U.S., and you'll often see scuppernongs, bronze muscadines sitting next to muscadines, which are marketed the black ones. But scuppernong is actually a specific bronze-fruited muscadine cultivar that was found in the wild. So that is a misuse of the name. You can also see some red and pink genotype seen. So there is a continuum through here, but generally within that black and bronze group. And the color is due, of course, to anthocyanin accumulation in the berry skins. So anthocyanins, as most of you are aware, are these colored, water-soluble pigments that we find in fruits and flowers. So they give lots of pretty flowers and fruits there, all of their red, purple, and blue colors. They protect the plants against reactive oxygen species caused by abiotic stresses, and there are putative health benefits for humans as well, so they're interesting from a nutraceutical perspective, as well as for giving our plants their pretty colors and our wine its beautiful color as well. There's lots of different types of anthocyanins: malvidin, peonidin, pelargidin, betunidin, cyanidin, delphinidin, and these all have different characteristics for how stable they are and what color they provide. Muscadines in particular have non-acylated diglucoside anthocyanins, and this is not great because they lack color stability, these particular types of anthocyanins. So wines will brown very quickly, and that's one problem that you see among many with muscadine wine. The anthocyanins in Vitis vinifera, in contrast, are mostly monoglucosides and acylated glucosides, and they have better stability. We're also interested in proanthocyanidins, which are other compounds that related to anthocyanins that are found mostly in seeds, and these are used along with leftover skins and pumice to create these nutraceutical products that are sold. So muscadine in particular has gotten a reputation for being a superfood. So the flavonoid biosynthesis pathway, fortunately, is super well understood. The anthocyanins and proanthocyanidins are both flavonoids. This pathway has been well studied in maize, petunia, snapdragon, strawberry, many model species. All of these compounds are synthesized in the cytoplasm, and then they are transported and stored in the vacuoles where you have that very low pH environment. So you have generally three control points. You've got the regulatory genes, like these mid-transcription factors, then different structural enzymes, F3H, F35H, and then transporters that play a role in carrying the anthocyanins to their eventual home in the vacuole. So genetic control of color is very well understood in Vitis vinifera. The Vitis vinifera color gene has been mapped to a 5-megabase pair region on chromosome 2. And it's regulated by a single cluster of three different MIB-A1 genes. These guys are shown to be accounting for about 84% of varicolor variation in grapes, and there's five different polymorphisms that have been detected within those retrotransposons and within those genes. So structural changes in the MIB proteins and differences in these promoters all change colors in grapes, and there's been a lot of different work that's been published, and these are just three that I'll highlight. So there was very little known about color in muscadine grape in the control. We knew there was bronze and black, but it wasn't sure whether it was the same mid-transcription factors or something else. So a couple years ago, we built the first dense linkage maps of muscadine using genotyping by sequencing. We did a lot of interesting work in that project. I want to focus on the color work here, but we also determined that Vitis rotundifolia, muscadine chromosomes 7 and 20, both align to chromosome 7 of Vitis vinifera. So that explains the extra chromosome number that we see. And we were able to map the locus for flower sex as well and confirm some markers that Patrick Connor's group had developed earlier. So our work on berry color was that we had two heterozygote black parents for two different mapping populations, Black Beauty by Nesbitt and Supreme by Nesbitt. And so because they're both heterozygote and black color is dominant, we expected and we did in fact find a 3-to-1 ratio of black to bronze color there. And we published these linkage maps recently in Theoretical Applied Genetics this year, so it's a good paper, so check it out. Here are the different linkage maps that we created, so good density across there and really excellent collinearity with the Vitis vinifera genome. So for our color locus, we mapped it to the same area in both the Black Beauty by Nesbitt and Supreme by Nesbitt populations on chromosome 4. But wait. The color locus in grapes maps to the MIB color locus maps to chromosome 2. So I was very excited, and that is a picture of my face when I saw where it mapped to. And both of these guys to this 0.8 megabase pair region on chromosome 4. So when we zoomed in a little bit more closely, we used the Vitis vinifera genome as a reference, and we looked at what are the predicted genes in that region. And fortunately, we found a gene that has a known role in anthocyanin pathway. So GSTs are transporters that have a known role in carrying those anthocyanins that are completed in the cytoplasm through the vacuole. So great, we thought that's probably it. Now we have to spend 2 years validating it. We designed primers around the region there, and we amplified a 370 base pair region and sequenced it using Sanger sequencing. And we used the BLAST search to confirm that this is similar to the GST genes that are in other species. A little bit more about GSTs. They're a superfamily of proteins. They have diverse functions. A lot of herbicide resistance genes are also related to GSTs, interestingly enough. So they have catalytic activity by glutathione using a GSH that they also bind to before they carry it. And so they act as carrier proteins, and they're involved in vacuolar sequestration. And there are a lot of genes and other different species in maize, petunia, grape, Arabidopsis, citrus, and strawberry that are GSTs that have a confirmed role in causing interesting color mutants. So we sequenced the full-length gene. We isolated the RNA from berry skins first, and then we used the cDNA with these primers to amplify the entire 652 base pair gene. Thank you. And we did find a single SNP mutation here from a C to a T that seemed to be related to our color mutation. When we looked at the protein alignment, we in fact found that it was non-synonymous mutation and that this was associated with a CCG formed a proline in black grapes and a CTG formed the leucine that was in the bronze. So all looking good. We used this information to design a CASP assay right around that causal mutation, and we genotyped all of the mapping populations as well as a bunch of different cultivars from our program and other programs and all of our breeding germplasm, and we found it to be perfectly predictive for color. Interestingly enough, the kind of pink genotype seemed to be with the bronze, and the red are up there with the black. So now we were also able to tell whether we had heterozygotes or homozygotes for black color, and we were interested in knowing whether we had an additive or a dominant gene action, because if it was additive, then maybe having that CC genotype would be useful for us in a breeding program. So my undergrad honor student, Autumn, actually harvested fruit from selected progeny from these mapping populations, and she measured the total anthocyanins. So as you can see here, the result was good, but a little disappointing for me who wanted to have a useful new marker, because the action is definitely dominant here. So there's no difference in anthocyanin content between the heterozygote and homozygote black classes. And she did confirm that delphinidin was the dominant anthocyanin in all the genotype classes. We were also interested in the proanthocyanidin content, because we know that accumulates in seeds, and those are also carried by GSTs into the vacuoles where they're sequestered. But here we found there was no difference between the black and the bronzes from the mapping population at all. And that was kind of surprising to us, but then we actually looked at the gene expression of GST3 and GST4 in seeds and skins. And you can see here that GST4, where we have this causal mutation in color, is not expressed very highly in the seeds. Instead, what's expressed quite highly are the GST3s, where there is no mutation. So that kind of explains why we found that. So in summary, I think we have some pretty good evidence now that this is our candidate gene for muscadine color variation. We have a single SNP marker that we can use for determining whether bronze or black. I kind of like both, so I'm not sure I'll pay for it. We have GST4 that expressed more highly in skins than seeds. And it's very exciting that we have a different mutation than what controls berry color in vinifera. So next, we are working on cloning the gene, and we're doing some protein modeling and docking and dynamic studies to understand what causes this to be non-functional all of a sudden. We're doing some expression studies in collaboration with Ibrahim back there, and we are also interested in investigating GST4 as a possible candidate gene for bronze color in Vitis labrusca alba, which has an interesting black color, and Ben there has sent us some great samples that we've been using in our preliminary work from the Geneva collection. I'm also, in summary, interested in using kind of molecular breeding tools to do other work on anthocyanin and color quality in muscadines, hoping to use some wide hybrids with uveitis grapes to bring in genes for acylated anthocyanins and monoglucosides so we can create a wine that is more stable over time. So thanks, everyone, who worked on this project. It's been a big, long project, starting with the mapping population and through all this validation. And I want to give special credit to Aruna Varanasi, the postdoc who has led most of this work and taught me a lot about all this upstream analysis that I would, you know, never have done before, because I'm much more of an applied breeder. And also thanks to Autumn, who is our undergrad student who's worked on this project. And Autumn is going to give a more detailed presentation about her work in the undergraduate presentation contest later today. So please go and see her. So thanks very much, everyone. I'm sure I'm out of time. I'm out of time, so you can see me after.